Coming to you live from the Hollywood Bowl, it's the Hand Podcast brought to you by Movie Changeup, where each week I, Joseph Fricke, and my co-host Tristan Mayer break down this week in streaming. We talk about all the best movies and shows on streaming, what you should watch, what you should avoid, and we just kind of try to keep people up to date on everything out there. There's a lot of content, a lot of services out there. Hopefully, if you're not really sure what to watch, we can guide you in a direction. Tristan and I go our separate ways. We just watch what interests us, what we think may interest you, and then come back and kind of recommend things to each other, essentially, and let you in on the conversation. Tristan, I ask you the same question every week. How was your week in streaming?
I thought it was a pretty great week, Joe, honestly. I thought it was really stacked. I watched a great amount of stuff. It was very one-sided, as we'll get into the discussion here. I honestly spent a lot of time on two platforms in particular. Not a lot of time on many of the others, but it'll be a good conversation. We have a good amount of stuff to talk about for especially Netflix and Disney Plus. Those will be the big conversations this week, but yeah, I can't wait to get into the whole conversation.
All right, yeah, definitely looking forward to it. Why don't we start with one we talk about regularly, and that's HBO Max, the H in Hand Plus, which is our acronym title. And do you want to just kick it off with our movie of the week?
I think that works. Yeah, we mentioned last week that we're going to start a tradition here. We do a movie of the week and try and represent some of the platforms here that maybe don't get so much representation. And this week we went for Malcolm X. It was the anniversary, I believe the 30th anniversary of it this week. And it came out on Criterion tomorrow. It's coming out tomorrow on Criterion, so it kind of fits into my viewing theme too. So I thought it was a great combination here. But we had the Wakanda Forever connection with Viola Davis.
Angela Bassett.
Angela Bassett. And yeah, a great movie here. I thought this was great. I love Spike Lee and I love his style, and I think he really kind of showed his style here, and showed, especially because the length is so long, I think his style makes it very watchable. It keeps it alive and it keeps it vibrant, and he has his really kind of lively energy to this whole entire thing. It's over 3 hours. It's like 3:20 or something like that, and I think he does a great job making that pace run and giving you the story of Malcolm X, not just like the iconic moments of his life, but just a picture of the man, who he was like before we, you know, the things we know about him, and this kind of a picture of the highs and the lows and the good things and the bad things about this man, and also in, within the art of the film, kind of embodying his viewpoint too. I thought it was a really well done movie, and probably Spike Lee's magnum opus, I would say, to be honest. It's up there, especially with Do the Right Thing, for me as like a definitive Spike Lee movie. What did you think, Joe, of Malcolm X?
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of his movies. I saw Black Klansman that came out a few years ago. I've seen a few of them, but not all of them. And this is my first time watching it. I've heard people talk about it over the years, especially as I've become more and more of a film fan. I guess I never realized it's 3.5 hours long, which especially for at that time period was extremely long. Now we're kind of at the point where 2:45, 3 hours is almost an average movie length, but I like the movie a lot. I've heard people talk, you know, Denzel is one of my favorite actors, and I've never seen this performance of him, and I've heard over and over, oh, like, he should have won the Oscar that year, like, the Training Day Oscar was just a makeup Oscar for Malcolm X, and this, that, and the third, and after watching it, I definitely agree. I haven't seen Son of a Woman with Al Pacino, but I can't imagine it's any better than what Denzel Washington did in Malcolm X. There, you know, one of the things that I thought was a very masterful decision is the kind of people in history you recognize are in this movie. Like, there are people in history in this movie besides Malcolm X, but like the recognizable people, like especially Martin Luther King Jr., aren't in this movie. You see them talk about Malcolm X through news clips, and he's very much a part of this movie, but they don't appear played by actors in this movie. So you almost in a way forget that this is a dramatized portrayal. This isn't basically like a documentary. And I thought that aspect of it was really well done. A lot of aspects were really well done. There was a couple times where I felt he kind of underestimated the audience's intelligence. Like there was a time where he was connecting back to a moment from his childhood and he showed it through flashbacks to previous scenes. I don't want to spoil, I mean, the movie's 30 years old, but if people haven't seen it, I don't want to spoil it. But if you've seen the movie and know the movie, you know what I'm talking about, that I felt like it was obvious what it was connecting to. I didn't need the actual scene again, interspliced with it. I understood what was going on.
Yeah, I definitely see that criticism. I like your point earlier, because he doesn't really hit all of the conventional biopic marks, like, oh, then they're going to have the scene where he shows up with all the famous people, and then they're going to have the scene where, you know, they play on our heartstrings at the end. And he kind of goes along the beats, I guess, but the beats of, like, any arc of a story, you know, you get the person at the beginning of their story in the normal, everyday kind of life, and then you get kind of the thing that changes their life and puts them into the person that we know them as. But I love that he avoids those very traditional beats of a biopic where you think you know exactly what you're going to get. You click on it, and I even thought about the Weird Al movie for a second, honestly, because that movie hits all those beats as a comedic point, you know, and it's, like, hitting all of them because it's funny, and this, I think, misses all of them because it's effective, and I really like that it subverts those beats, but not in, like, a really obvious, intentional way, just in a very natural way. Like you said, it feels like it's just a drama about this guy's everyday life, a documentary almost about this guy's life, and you're going to get the big, important moments, but you're also going to get him just kind of hanging out with his friends, you know, doing stuff, everyday stuff, and I think that really adds to the character a lot.
Yeah, I thought it was a really, really well-done biopic. If I were to make a list of top 10 biopics, I think it would easily be in the top 5 right now.
For sure, and I'm glad that it's on streaming too, because it's something that could be kind of forgotten and lost. Not forgotten necessarily, but the length, I think, turns people off, and I think the fact that it's now 30 years old, it could kind of get pushed into the algorithm somewhere and not really be found again, especially because it was like, oh, he didn't win the Oscar that year, might be going down as, like, the movie he didn't win for. So I love that HBO is keeping all their back catalog on here. You don't got to dig around and figure out, like, oh, where is Malcolm X? It's on the platform from the studio that made it. You know, I think it makes sense, and I'm glad that it's on there.
Yeah, me too. Anything else you got to say about Malcolm X before we move on?
No, I highly recommend it. Definitely check it out. I know Spike Lee can sound kind of be abrasive for some people, but I think that this is a really important movie, and I think if you are unaware of Malcolm X's story, this will give you a really great look at his life. But if you are aware of him as a historical figure, this is going to give you a good portrayal of him as a person too, and kind of the humanity behind that big iconic figure that we know so well.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And next week, our movie of the week, we're sticking with a hard-hitting drama, big emotional kind of epic, and we are doing Willow. That's going to be on Disney Plus. We got meet Tristan and I. Kind of, I think part of our movie of the week is it's movies Tristan and I haven't seen, or at least one of us haven't seen, and it's going to be kind of the underserved, smaller movies. We're never going to do, hey, our movie of the week is Star Wars Episode 4 or mm-hmm. Avatar. Like, our movies are always going to be maybe movies that people have heard of, but maybe movies that not a lot of people have seen. And it'll kind of just give us a reason to talk about certain streaming services or certain movies that are coming out. But the sequel series is coming out later this month, so we decided, hey, let's remind people that Willow's coming out, but also give us a reason to both watch a movie that neither of us have seen. So like I said, next week, movie of the week is going to be Willow, so we'll talk about that during our Disney Plus section next week.
I'm excited for it. I haven't seen it, like you said, and I've heard so much nostalgic talk about it, especially with the series coming up, so I'm looking forward to it. And yeah, if you guys have suggestions for movies that you think are like deep cuts that we probably haven't seen on these platforms, I'd love to get some suggestions, because we're trying to find stuff that neither of us have seen, and it's a little bit hard because we've all seen a lot of different movies, you know. Yeah. So whenever we pick something, it's either one of us has seen it or both of us have seen it.
Yeah. All right. And there's another movie that I feel like you think could be something that doesn't win an Oscar like Malcolm X did, that you watched on HBO Max this year or this week, and that is A Christmas Story Christmas, a sequel to the A Christmas Story, a movie that I think pretty much everyone has seen because it airs all day Christmas Day, and I think even Christmas Eve on TBS. So what was your thoughts on A Christmas Story Christmas?
Yeah, there's been a handful of sequels to Christmas Story over the years. Most of them are very, very bad. This is not quite as bad as those sequels are. I think it helps that they brought back Peter Billingsley to reprise his role as Ralphie. I think if you have any nostalgia for A Christmas Story, you'll get some joy out of seeing him back in the character, you know, back in the old house, back with some of the old props and the old characters. So I think you'll like it if you have some nostalgia for the movie, because it really, really rides on that nostalgia. It essentially is just the same movie in a lot of the beats over again, in the same places and a lot of the same characters. But I think what it misses that the old movie has is that edge and that kind of, you know, what I do like about the first Christmas Story is it doesn't feel like that overly wholesome, super happy family. You know, they're a family that fights and swears and it gets into like the average everyday American problems of what people are actually going through at the time. And I think that's why it's resonated so much, is because it feels real. It feels like an actual family and the actual problems that they would face on the Christmas time and the Christmas season. And this does not feel like a real family. This feels like a Hallmark card family. It feels like any of those hyper wholesome, hug your family by the fireplace kind of movies. And it doesn't feel like a Christmas Story movie. I feel like the tone is way off. And if you have nostalgia, there's going to be a bunch of throwbacks, a bunch of movie references, not just to Christmas Story, but to all of those holiday classics. You know, there's some Home Alone references in there. And you're going to get all kinds of holiday cheer out of this if you have love for those old movies. But if you're a bit sick of the nostalgia craze, and or if you want to see any kind of interesting take on Christmas Story, you're not going to get it here. It's a very bland, very forgettable revival of an IP. It's not the worst movie of the year, I don't think, but it's very, very low down there. It has nothing new to do with the IP, nothing really new to do with the Christmas movie at all. So I think it's going to be something that if anybody watches it at all, they're not going to remember it in a couple of months. You know, next Christmas, no one's going to watch this.
So my question for you, and I think I know the answer, is someone who's seen the original Christmas Story a couple of times, and every time I've watched it, I don't get it at all. I do not like it. I think it's actually kind of a bad movie, badly made, just nothing about it is good. I should definitely not watch this, right?
Yeah, I would avoid this. I think the only thing you would like about this is that it is a bit more produced than the original movie. It's much more like studio shot, and, you know, has a more better score, better performances, I guess. But yeah, if you don't have any love for the first one, I don't necessarily see anybody loving this, unless you really love those wholesome, heartfelt Christmas movies. This is one of those wholesome, heartfelt Christmas movies, but it doesn't feel like the first movie in that way.
All right, yeah, so I'm probably just never going to watch this. Sorry, Ralphie.
I wouldn't blame you.
Sorry, Peter Billingsley. The only Christmas movie I'm going to watch that you're in is Elf.
Interestingly enough, he has a writing credit on this, so I'm not sure what his contribution was.
Well, I know Peter Billingsley like basically went on to be a producer, and he was a producing partner with Jon Favreau for a long time and helped him produce Elf, and that's why he plays the like head toy maker in Elf. So,
yeah, that's an interesting connection. I didn't really know that, but yeah, that makes sense because he is a producer on Iron Man and a couple of the Jon Favreau movies. So that makes sense to me.
All right, yeah. So I believe unless we have some HBO Max news, let me look. I should have looked at this while you were talking, but hey, everybody can't be perfect. All right, yeah, that kind of wraps up our HBO Max discussion. So there wasn't really much on Amazon Prime. Amazon Prime, I'm not going to lie, has kind of been a letdown recently. Like, every time I'm going on there and I'm like, oh, I got to find something on Amazon Prime to watch for the podcast. Something's got to interest me. And every time, nothing interests me. Like, they do have good stuff. Like, they have The Boys. I missed last season, but I definitely want to check it out before the new season comes. Invincible's a good show. Like, they have quality content. It's just, and Lord of the Rings... Rings of Power wasn't for me, but I still think it was like a top show that people cared about and were interested. I'm just not a big Lord of the Rings fan. I just don't think they're consistently releasing content that people care about. It feels like it's in spurts where it's like, okay, here's 6 weeks worth of content, and then they take 6 weeks off, and then they release 6 weeks of good content and take 6 weeks off. So it's just hard to keep up with Amazon Prime. But I think if you have AMC Plus or Amazon Prime, you were able to watch the finale of Walking Dead, which no one reached out to us. I said last week or 2 weeks ago, hey, if you are still watching The Walking Dead, you are a week-to-week Walking Dead fan, tweet at me and I will allow you to be on the entirety of this show. No one reached out to me, so that just leads me to believe no one watched it. Not a single person. Zero people watched The Walking Dead finale this last week.
Yeah, if you look at the graph of Walking Dead viewership over the years, you can see it really going up and really peaking right at the baseball bat moment. If you've seen the show, you know what moment I'm talking about. And right after that scene, right after that episode, it just all the way to the floor. And yeah, I made a thought of watching this, and then I looked into the season and realized it was a 24-episode season, and I was like, 24 episodes? What decade are we in where I'm watching 24-episode network TV dramas, you know? I don't know about that.
Yeah.
So maybe one day I'll go and I'll binge the rest of The Walking Dead, because I'm two or three seasons behind. I probably made it further than most people did. But in the end, I lost steam, and I'm not the only one.
I would still say if The Walking Dead had been a five-season, 12 to 16 episodes, or yeah, I'd say even like 12 to 18 episode seasons, I think it would have been up there in the greatest of all time, up there with the Breaking Bad, at least in recent history, of the Breaking Bad's Game of Thrones type of shows.
Yeah, they've gone on way, way too many seasons at this point.
Yeah.
Total loss of relevancy. This is the most I've talked about Walking Dead in 5 years.
Yeah. I don't know anyone that still watches. I mean, when I was in college in like 2013, 2014, everyone was watching The Walking Dead. Now I don't know anyone that does. But yeah, that wraps up our Amazon Prime talk, because what's there to talk about? If you're watching this show and there's something on Amazon Prime that you're watching recently that just came out in this last 2 weeks and you're like, you guys need to be talking about this, 100% hit us up, tweet at us, at MovieChangeUp, talk to the hand, tell us, hey, you guys need to be watching this. Why aren't you watching this? But every time I go on Amazon Prime, nothing sticks out to me is to watch this. So I'm just going to keep on not watching until probably Invincible Season 2 or Boys Season 5 or 6 or whatever comes out. So that kicks us over to Netflix. You watched two movies. Both of them are kind of deal with the holiday we just had of Halloween, but the second one deals with the holiday that's coming up, and that is Thanksgiving, and also relevant to a show debuting later this month in Wednesday. For the first time in your life, you watched two movies I watched on repeat growing up, and that's Addams Family and Addams Family Values, and I'm very curious to see what you thought about these movies.
Yeah, these are my first time watching this, and I'm not totally unfamiliar, because I watched the TV show Addams Family a lot on reruns back in the day, so I knew the characters and I knew like the beats of the show and stuff like that. So I was familiar enough to go into this and be very excited. So I finally watched it. Full disclosure, I watched it on Blu-ray, so at least the first one. I streamed the second one, so the first one I thought was really great, and I love these versions of the characters, and I wasn't quite sure how the tone was going to translate, because the original show is very tongue-in-cheek and campy and silly, and the movie, I wasn't sure how much into the goofiness is it going to go. Is it going to be like Munsters level campy and goofy, or is it going to have any level of character and drama there to it? And I think it does a great balance. It's very silly and very fun and very campy and tongue-in-cheek, but it's not like so ridiculous and goofy that it's like beyond the like a watchable movie, you know. I think it captures that tone of the original show so well, and especially I love these versions of the characters. I can tell why like Christina Ricci's Wednesday and all of these characters became like the iconic embodiments of these characters. They have the tones down so well. I definitely thought the second one was just about as good as the first, to be honest. It's rare that you get a big studio sequel that is as good as the first movie. Sometimes, you know, they don't really put the money where it is, especially back in like, you know, the 90s and the times when it's not necessarily the franchise takeover era of today, where everything's the next big IP that you're going to watch forever, you know. And I'm glad that they actually put the money into the sequel and made it a really good, and like you mentioned, a Thanksgiving movie. We don't get a lot of those, and it's a perfect time to watch a Thanksgiving movie. You don't get many, so I was really, really happy to finally throw a Thanksgiving movie on. So yeah, I'm really happy with these, Joe. I know you watched them a lot when you were a kid. You have a lot of nostalgia for these. What are your memories of for Addams Family, the movies?
I don't know. It's just one of those movies that I felt like were always on Stars all the time. We had Stars for most of my childhood growing up, and I would see the movies. You know, Christina Ricci as Wednesday Addams was like one of my first celebrity crushes, which weirdly explains a lot. But I thought, you know, they're really well made, kind of, I would just describe them as family movies, the type of movies they honestly really don't make anymore unless they're animated, which is very much supports my theory, considering the last two Addams Family movies to come out were animated movies. You just don't see straight up family movies that come out that aren't action, superhero, fantastical movies. Obviously, there's fantastical elements to the Addams Family, but it's just like, I don't want to keep repeating myself, but there's just not movies like this that come out anymore.
Yeah, it feels like this is a demographic, like a little niche that's being missed, you know, where it doesn't devolve into a big action spectacle thing. It's not, and it's also not like completely laughing at itself so much. I feel like sometimes the comedies, like some of the Marvel comedies and stuff like that, it feels like they're so pointing the finger at themselves that it feels like they aren't taking themselves seriously at all, and aren't like respecting the source material in any way. And this feels like it's having fun with the source material without like making a mockery of it. I really like this a lot. I'm glad I finally watched it, because it's one that's been on my list forever, and the Wednesday show finally was my excuse to watch both of these back to back, and it got my hype pretty high for the Wednesday show. I'm wondering how much the Wednesday show is going to be all about Wednesday and how much of it's going to involve like the family, because I thought what was really appealing about both of these movies was the family dynamic and the zany characters having like interact with each other. And I think if they are entirely focused on Wednesday in this new show, it might miss some of that fun, interactive zaniness that I got from the characters here. That's my biggest fear now going into Wednesday, is that I'm wondering how much I'm going to miss all of the supporting cast and if they're going to be present in the show or not.
Yeah. I'm very curious. Like, we've seen the trailer that, and I mean, with the casting, it makes me curious that they will have decent sized parts, but the show is called Wednesday and not the Addams Family. So I am curious, like you are, to see how it plays out. And it could be one of those things where season one, Wednesday, pretty much focuses on Wednesday, but as we potentially get to season two, season three, season four, it just kind of becomes the Addams Family, but it's still called Wednesday.
I also want to say, I think Jenna Ortega is going to do a great take on this character. She's a perfect fit.
Yep.
And yeah, once you see the look of her in the promotion from that series, I think she perfectly embodies the character here. I can't wait to see her take on it.
All right. Anything else you got to say about the Addams Family before we move on to 1899?
I definitely recommend them if you haven't watched them. If there's something you've been putting off, like, oh, they're just goofy kid movies, you know, just silly family movies, you know, they're definitely very entertaining and will be fun for adults too, I think. Yeah, like you said, that's something that might is missing right now. So yeah, definitely a fun for the whole family kind of movie, and I highly recommend it. You know, it's Thanksgiving weekend. Watch it with your friends and family, get together, have some nostalgia for the Addams Family, and get ready for Wednesday.
All right, yeah, I'm very excited to see Wednesday, and I may throw these on sometime this weekend. I may not. We'll see. We got a long weekend. I got 4 days in a row where I'm not doing much. And with that, we move on to another kind of what I've gathered from the trailers and images I've seen, a kind of dark and spooky atmospheric show, and that's 1899.
Yeah, I also watched 1899. I didn't finish it. I watched the first half of it because I wanted to kind of give my preview thoughts on it without necessarily knowing where it goes with the mystery of it. This is from the creators of Dark on Netflix. If you watch Dark, it was a German language time travel missing person mystery where a kid goes missing in a small town in Germany, and it unravels into this big crazy sci-fi story as it goes along. But this is very tight and very focused, and it has sci-fi and strange elements to it, but I like the focus so far. It's called 1899, obviously, because it's set in 1899 in October, and it follows a group of immigrants who are coming from England over on a steamboat to America, to New York City. And it's a very diverse cast of characters. They all have the different languages and cultures. I think that's something that is really cool about this show, is that they actually all speak like the actual languages of the people, and it's not, you know, everyone all of a sudden speaks English. So it's kind of cool that you have like multiple different languages of all these people. And the mystery comes in is because they are on the path of this previous steamboat that went missing about 4 or 5 months ago on the same route. And along their journey to New York, they receive a distress signal from this boat that was seemingly missing. And so they turn the ship around and go back to investigate this missing boat. And when they arrive, they find the entire boat abandoned. There's no crew, there's no passengers, and they kind of have to uncover the mystery of what happened on this boat. Is it connected to what's happening on their boat? And of course, all of the passengers have this kind of interconnected history. And as you're going along the show, you're learning more and more about these characters and their past connections. And maybe they each know more about the mystery than they let on. So if you're a fan of, you know, murder mysteries, tight-knit kind of Agatha Christie-style mysteries, this has that in there as well. But it also has that sci-fi angle of what's going on with this boat. And I don't want to spoil the escalations, but it does have more and more, you know, fantastical escalations, and things become more and more unreal as the mystery unravels. So I think if you're a fan of Dark, this is definitely in that style and that tone, but I'm liking this more than Dark. I think it's much more focused, which is something that I didn't necessarily love in Dark. It's not nearly as dense as Dark was. I think this is much more of a watchable, consumable show than Dark. Maybe that's a hot take, but I really, really am liking this so far. I can't wait to see how the mystery all unravels, because it's one of those shows where every episode ends with just some crazy plot reveal where you're like, what? And then you gotta watch the next episode to figure out what happened at the end of the last episode, because you're so mind blown by the previous one. And I can't wait to see if there's another season, if they're going to keep this going like they did with Dark for a couple of years, or if this is just a one-off thing. But I highly, highly recommend it. It's really, really well shot. It looks gorgeous. It sounds gorgeous. A really, really compelling mystery box drama on Netflix. If you're a fan of those miniseries that Netflix does that are just so every little tiny thing is a clue to the mystery. Every little eggshell you're walking on gives you one little next reveal. And yeah, I'm really compelled by this. I can't wait to finish it. And I would love to hear what you guys are thinking, because there's so much bubbling up in my mind theory-wise, but I don't want to get into all of that. Now I just want to say it's a really, really great drama and a great mystery that I can't recommend enough. It's one of my favorite things Netflix has released for the whole year, if not my favorite, to be honest.
All right, yeah, that definitely gets my interest, and if I got time, I'm definitely going to check it out. I feel like it's going to be one of those shows that if I turn it on, my girlfriend's going to say, why are we watching this? Because she does not do well with horror or anything spooky or scary or anything like that. So if I have time, I'm definitely going to try to watch it.
I love to hear your thoughts. Yeah, and I wouldn't say it's super spooky or scary. It's very, I would say spooky, but I wouldn't give it. It's not going to have big, crazy blood or gore or anything like that. It's going to give you the spooky vibes, the scary tone, but it's not like on the horror scales, high on the horror scale, you know.
All right, and as far as our upcoming section, I believe next week you're going to have our review for Del Toro's Pinocchio and Knives Out 2 early review.
Yep, I'm watching Knives Out on Wednesday. I'm watching Pinocchio, I believe, on Thursday, so I'll be able to get both of those out to you guys early, at least a couple of weeks early, so it'll always be good to get in some early reviews before they even drop on Netflix, you know, if they're worth watching or not.
All right, yeah. Definitely both of those movies I'm very interested in watching. Girlfriend, big Knives Out fan, so I know I'm watching Knives Out too. That's what determines if I'm watching a movie or show at this point. If my girlfriend wants to watch it, guess what? I get to watch it. If she doesn't want to watch it, I got to fight to watch it. That's why I watch Andor at 3 a.m. as soon as it drops, because she's asleep and she can't tell me what to watch when she's asleep.
Yep, I know that feeling.
All right, and that brings us over to Disney Plus, and we'll just start with the news section for this one, because this one could control the conversation, and that's Bob Iger's back. The board basically told Bob Chapek to kick rocks, stocks down too much, people are just generally unhappy with the Disney brand, and he did not last very long, and I think they're going to try a little bit harder and do a little bit more to set up the next guy. I think they figured that Bob Chapek was ready and the next guy up, but he clearly was not. And I don't know if it's going to be an outside hire, an inside hire, what the plan is. But basically, Bob Iger is going to back as CEO for the next 2 years. And I feel like the only person on the planet who's not over the moon excited, because I feel like Bob Chapek was so kind of not ready for the role that he let. I mean, the property I care about most that Disney owns, I don't care about the parks, Marvels, whatever. If the rest of the Marvel movies that come out suck, I'll be like, oh, that kind of sucks, but it's not going to ruin my day. It's not going to ruin my life. I don't care about Pixar. I don't care about Disney Channel. I kind of care about ESPN, but I feel like sometimes Disney forgets they own ESPN. What I care about is Lucasfilm and Star Wars, and I feel like Bob Chapek didn't really know what the fuck he was I try not to swear on this show, but I feel like Bob Chapek really didn't know what he was doing, so he let Lucasfilm and Kathleen Kennedy do whatever they wanted, and that finally allowed them to slow down and process what they were actually trying to make, and just making movies as they wanted to make them and not trying to hit release dates. And now I'm concerned with Bob Iger back that he's going to be like, but we're going to go back to one movie a year, and Kathleen Kennedy's like, damn it, we're trying to just make good movies and not focus on release dates. So that's my major concern with him coming back. But maybe, I mean, everything I've seen in interviews, he kind of acknowledges is that was a mistake of his as far as Star Wars is concerned. So maybe he will just allow them to basically be like, hey, you go make movies, we'll try to find space for them.
I think they got to find a middle ground, because yeah, they do want to be hands off on Lucasfilm, but I think looking at Lucasfilm, they need a little bit of hands-on right now. I think they need to get a product off the ground. They can't keep wasting money by getting stuff started and then not having it come to fruition. And I hope that Bob Iger can at least light a fire underneath them to at least get a project completed. Start production on something. Come on.
I'm fully convinced. Like, I understand before, like, they had guys come in and projects and somewhat announced that didn't get made, but I'm fully convinced with all the rumors and reports and everything I've heard that the Damon Lindelof movie will be, I don't remember if it was, I think it was 2025. I'm fully convinced that movie will be released in theaters and that movie will come to fruition. But I think so much of the, like, so many of the things I feel like were fake reports and things that were mixed signals, like the James Mangold Boba Fett movie, I think was never a thing. I think people heard reports of a Boba Fett project and heard reports that James Mangold was meeting with Lucasfilm, and those things got crossed when James Mangold was only ever meeting for Indiana Jones. And certain reports of, like, I think when it comes to Benioff and Weiss, I think Lucasfilm just straight up got outbid by Netflix. Like, they were probably all there ready to make movies, and Netflix was like, hey, we'll give you $250 million production deal. And they're like, sorry, Lucasfilm, we're headed to Netflix because they're giving us $250 million. And no, Lucasfilm should definitely not give them $250 million to make a trilogy of movies. And I fully convinced with the Rian Johnson thing of he was supposed to make Knives Out and then come back to do his trilogy. But when Knives Out came out, and was way bigger of a success than what Rian Johnson thought it was, plus what Kathleen Kennedy and Lucasfilm thought it was, he was like, hey, I want to keep making these while people still care. I don't want to make Knives Out and wait a decade to make Knives Out 2 when everyone's forgotten about it. Maybe Daniel Craig has no interest in coming back. And they're like, hey, we get it. And this is only good for us because obviously people are upset about Episode 8. So if you make 2, 3, 4 Knives Out movies and people love them and your stock is at an all-time high and you're like, hey, my next, and you announce, hey, my next project is a Star Wars trilogy or a Star Wars movie focusing on X or whatever, people are going to be over the moon excited. They're going to be like, hey, I didn't like Episode 8, but I loved all these Knives Out movies, so I can't wait to see what else he can do in Star Wars. So I think, like, some of them obviously plans fell through, like the J.D. Dillard one. That was straight up just like, hey, they were meeting and it fell through. The Patty Jenkins one, I think that was, they were meeting, they had plans, and it fell through. But I don't think all of them are exactly like, oh, Kathleen Kennedy and Lucasfilm don't know what they were doing. I think some of it's just things, and I don't think they're helped that all eyes in the entertainment journalism world are on Star Wars. So all these people are constantly asking Star Wars questions, so... hopefully they can right the ship, turn it around. Clearly Andor's come out. People love that. I love it. You love it. It's definitely the best well-made television series they've got going. They entered production on season 2 today. So,
I'm really curious because I do think new blood was needed, and I don't think Bob Iger is new blood. You know, I think the biggest problem is not to get rid of Chapek. I think they had to get rid of Chapek, but going backwards to Bob Iger feels kind of desperate, and I think it shows a company that doesn't necessarily have a good idea of where they're going to be in the future. You know, going backwards is not a sign that you know what the future is going to look like, and that makes me a bit nervous for this company, especially when you want to bring it back to the streaming conversation. Bob Iger, in particular, was a big advocate that Disney Plus is a family platform. We're not going to have TVMA stuff. We're not going to have R-rated movies. Yeah. We got to be a family brand, and I think we're finally seeing Disney Plus with stuff like Andor branch out to more mature audiences. We're finally even seeing the MCU, for all of its faults, try and experiment a little bit and find a new identity in this kind of current phase of Marvel. And I hope that Bob Iger doesn't come back in and say, okay, now we're going to come back and be a family brand again. We're going to come back and all be very same, all be very similar, and all be kind of very homogenous. And that is exactly what I was hoping that we could avoid by getting rid of Bob Iger in the first place. And that was what I thought Chapek was achieving a lot as a leader here, is he was being hands-off enough that Marvel and Star Wars were able to take a step back and figure out, like, what do we actually want to make here? And Marvel was able to get out of the reins a bit and let Sam Raimi experiment and make something crazy and let, you know, Chloe Zhao make her movie the way she wanted to make it. And make Taika Waititi, he was able to make his kind of goofy total comedy, and I don't necessarily think all of those movies worked perfectly, but I think it was very exciting and interesting, and I was excited for the future of Marvel under that direction. And I hope that Bob Iger is not a step back for all of that, back to the homogenous sameness that it was before.
And I think another problem with anytime you're retreating like that, when you're like, okay, Bob Iger is going to be the CEO for 2 years while he grooms or trains the next guy or girl, I feel like you're a lame dunk lame duck CEO where you're not going to be in here like, oh, I'm going to acquire properties, or oh, I'm going to make these big changes and big shakeups. Like, you're basically just steering the ship, keeping it from going off the rails, and you're not going to do anything major crazy. It's just going to be kind of neutral and boring for 2 years. And I'm not saying he's going to be producing neutral or boring content, but he's not going to be doing anything wild, like, company-wise.
Yeah, the biggest conversation for the next 2 years is going to be, who is his replacement? Who is he spending his time with? Who is he giving production roles to? You know, who is he making the new face of Disney? That's going to be what I think people start talking about. After this news settles down, it's going to be, okay, but who is next now?
Yeah, for sure. All right, you ready to talk about the actual content of Disney Plus? Now that we've talked shit about Bob Iger, and I feel like you and I are the only two people on the planet who aren't, like, doing jumping jacks, running laps around our house naked.
I do want to talk about Limitless and Chris Hemsworth for half a second here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll let you kick that off. I watched part of the first episode, and I'll be honest. Well, I'll let you talk about it, and then I'll give my thoughts.
Well, I want to talk less about Limitless, the show, because it is a serviceable show. It does what it's going to do on the tin. You know, Chris Hemsworth pushes the body to the limit. He kind of experiments on these different ideas of human health and the limits of the human body and what it's capable of and how we can get beyond that limitation. But I think the most conversation around this season and around Chris Hemsworth recently has been that in the process of making this season, he found out that he has genetic predisposition to Alzheimer's, and he's decided to step away from acting for at least a handful of years to be with his family and his friends and to have that peaceful time that he's earned with people he loves, and then maybe in a few years come back to acting after, you know, he sees where this goes from here. And I think it's sad to see, but it's also I think a positive story in a way, because it's good that he was able to get this found early. It's good that he's able to step away and take time for his family, and I do hope that this starts a bit of a conversation about that kind of issue, you know, getting people screened as early as they possibly can, getting people access to screenings and things like that, so that people can be aware of what they're at risk for as early as they possibly can be to fight for it. And I'm hoping for the best for Chris Hemsworth. I'm hoping that so early he can have, you know, put up a good fight here. So yeah, I love him as an actor, and it would be a shame to have him be gone forever from the Hollywood world, you know?
Yeah, he was a guy who you look at him and everything and you're like, oh, he's the next great action star, and somehow he accidentally found himself as, like, the next great comedy star. Like, they kept putting in movies like Ghostbusters, and even in Thor, his roles and his personality and everything was very much clearly suited for comedy. And I think in a world where he didn't find himself playing Thor, I think he would have been perfect for the Fast and the Furious universe, and he may even still find himself there one day. Definitely kind of shocking news. Hopefully everything works out for him. It's not a guarantee that he ever gets Alzheimer's. It's just, I think he's like 10 times more likely than the, I think what I saw is he's like 10 to 12 times more likely than the average person to get it. So hopefully he doesn't and everything works out for him. But I'll be honest, I watched the first like three quarters of the first episode, and my thought before I watched something else that we're going to talk about, because it was something that had a start, you know, an exact start time, and I'm like, oh, I'll just watch this until it starts. And I'll be honest, it's the show Limitless is fine. It's okay. What I saw, it's something that I feel like back in the day would have been on Discovery. Well, it's produced by National Geographic, but it's something that would have been on Discovery Channel that I would have watched a marathon of on like a Saturday afternoon and never thought of again. It's okay. It's just, hey, Chris Hemsworth trying to find the limit of his body. It's not mind-blowing. I think if you're not a Chris Hemsworth fan, it's probably not gonna be that compelling or that interesting, unless you're someone super obsessed with like the human body and what its limits are. But outside of that, I really wouldn't recommend it to anyone if you're like, I don't really care for Chris Hemsworth, and documentary shows aren't anything I go crazy for. I'd say, yeah, you can probably just skip this.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily recommending the show. I thought it was more of a conversation piece, you know? But yeah, maybe a skip to the episode that's actually where he finds out about the Alzheimer's. If you're purely looking for entertainment value, yeah. I would just at least skip to that episode if you want to be in the conversation for that.
Yeah. All right, and I will jump to the show I watched. The first two episodes have dropped, and that is The Santa Clauses, starring Tim Allen. It's a movie franchise I grew up with. I think the first one came out maybe around the time I was born, because in the show they're talking about, you know, I've been Santa Claus for 28 years, and then there's a time jump in the first episode where it goes to the next Christmas, and he's like, I've been Santa Claus for 29 years, and I'm 29 years old, so basically he's been Santa Claus my entire life. Honestly, when I think about the physical entity of Santa Claus, I envision the Tim Allen Santa Clausified version of Santa Claus. Like, that's the vibe and the feeling and the image I get when I think of Santa Claus. And the first two, like I said, the first two episodes have dropped, and I'll be honest, this is very much a tale of two episodes. Midway through basically as I was watching the first episode, I'm like, okay, this is gonna be a roast session, like on par with our Grogu Zen short thing of last week. It was just very much pessimistic, old man yells at clouds. Like, they were injecting politics into it, and I'm fine with politics in shows. Like, there's politics in Andor, and it works, and it fits, but this is a show, a family show about Santa Claus, in a franchise that's had three movies that's never touched on politics, and now I have Santa Claus saying, oh, saying Merry Christmas is considered problematic, and just so many things, like, that aren't even how the world is today. Like, Santa Claus is saying the Christmas magic is gone because kids are all mean to each other, and the youth today sucks. And I'm thinking to myself, I've seen over and over, I see it online all over, that teachers are saying the difference between this generation and, like, kids in school now and all, like, teachers who've been teachers for 30, 40, 50 years of, like, yeah, the kids in school now are, like, the nicest set of kids I've ever taught. And so I almost feel like they could have used that in a way. And instead of him being, like, pessimistic that the kids today suck, he could have said, like, oh, like, the problem is, like, the kids today, so many kids are making the nice list. So many kids, you know, I'm having to deliver more presents than I've ever had to before. But kids don't believe in magic anymore. They're, like, so obsessed with technology, so obsessed with their phones, so obsessed with the internet. They don't believe in magic. So my powers are less than they've ever been, and I have to do more work than I've ever been. I would have been like, okay, I can understand that. That tracks. But when you're saying kids are worse today than they've ever been and meaner today than they've ever been, I'm just like, that's categorically just not true. And so it takes me out of it. And it was, the first episode was just so, like I said, very much old man yells at clouds and just Santa being grumpy and talking about how everything sucks and he wants to retire. And I'm like, what is this? Like, this is like, Santa needs to be fun and jolly. And the second episode completely, to me, turned it around. It was, you know, like I said, if they only released the first episode and they had, you know, in the second episode I had to wait a week, I don't think I would have watched the second episode. I think I would have just written the whole show off. But the second episode was a lot more jolly, and it didn't seem as pessimistic. Like, sure, it had some of the touchstones on it, and there were some levels of nostalgia, and there were things that lines, like I said, that don't line up, like things like his wife, Mrs. Claus, talking about how she doesn't even remember what her first name is anymore, and like the next scene Santa calls her Carol, which was her like human name before she became Mrs. Claus. So I'm like, if he routinely calls you your first name, how did you forget it just because you're saying no, everyone calls you Mrs. Claus? Doesn't make sense. But they do answer questions that people, like, the plot of this show, as they got through the second episode, was the questions fans of this franchise have been asking since the franchise came out. Like, Santa's wants to retire, but he's like, if I retire, is anyone gonna care? He's like, when I replaced Santa and got to the North Pole, everyone, the elves were happy and cheery and jolly, and, like, if that's how it is when I retire and they don't care about me, then is everything I've done for the last 30 years pointless? And I'm like, oh, they're actually using, like, fan theories and questions and all these things people have wondered as the plot of this show. So I think that's really cool. Like, Mrs. Claus is doing digging, and she's, like, trying to figure out if there was a Mrs. Claus before her. Like, when, like, her husband Santa became Santa, who was there a Mrs. Claus before her, and who was she? Because she's trying to figure out, you know, if she can be basically a different version of Mrs. Claus, because she doesn't like the kind of representative version of her, of like this frumpy old lady, because she's like, that's not who I am. So second episode for me, complete 180, and I'm definitely going to be keeping up with this show. So I'll say this, if you are a fan of the original series or original movies, I don't know how it's going to turn out. Like I said, only two episodes are out. Watch the first episode. You're probably not going to like it. You're probably going to be like, what is this? But then watch the second episode, and I think it will change your opinion a little bit.
I'll tell you, Joe, you won me over a bit, because I watched about 10 minutes of this, and I said, no, I'm not doing this. This is not something I'm going to watch. And you told me the second episode is better, so I'm going to push myself. I'm going to finish the first one, and then I'm going to watch the second one. And what episode a week, or is it going to be like in chunks?
I don't know. It's only six episodes total, so I think it's going to probably just be one a week.
All right, so I'll have three episodes watched by next week. I'll give you my thoughts on the first half, then, of Santa Claus is next week. You convinced me to at least push through, because those first couple minutes, I watched maybe 10, 15 minutes of the first episode, and I said, not finishing this. This is not going to be for me. Joe can watch this.
I can understand that. Like, if you got the first 15 minutes and you tapped out, I get that. But as someone who watched the second episode as well, I would say push through, watch the first episode, watch the second episode. And the actress that plays Santa Claus is Scott Calvin's daughter, and this is Tim Allen's actual daughter. So,
that's cool.
Fun little connection in there. And it's solid. It's okay. I'm sure some people out there are like, it ruins the original movie. Santa Claus 3 is garbage and hot trash, and Santa Claus 2 is just okay. The only movie I would say is actually a genuinely well-made good movie is the first one. So even if this series turns out horrible, it's not really going to ruin anything, because the first one is the only genuinely good one.
You're right.
But that, wraps up pretty much everything I have to say about the Santa Clauses.
All right, I can move on here. I watched another revival of a beloved franchise. This one is one that I was kind of looking forward to, because I liked the original a lot, and that is Disenchanted. The revival of Enchanted, starring Amy Adams. The whole, leading cast comes back, at least for a couple of scenes here and there for this movie. James Morrison is in the first movie. He's not exactly like a main player here, but he shows up, so they'll give people like a couple of scenes just to have him show up for the movie here. But yeah, it's an interesting revival, because they don't do the exact same thing as the original movie does, which is what I seem to be a lot the go-to thing for some of these reboots. And for this, it's following Gazelle and her husband, played against him, Patrick Dempsey, back again for this. And now they're living in this really kind of illustrious suburb of New York, and kind of like northern New York, like New York State. And it's this really, really beautiful apartment. And Gazelle's daughter is named Morgan. She's become a teenager. She's gotten too cool for her stepmom. She's kind of moving on and becoming, that angsty teen who doesn't want to hang out with her parents anymore. And she wants to go be with her friends and talk to boys. And Amy Adams' character is not ready to have her daughter grow up and let go of that part of her life. So she decides to cast a spell, and she says, I wish my life was like a fairy tale. And then the big spell comes out, and the whole entire town, everybody in it, all becomes like the perfect fairy tale version of a town, down to like the glamorous colors and all of the flying, talking, animals, and all the people are very kind of lively and happy and smiling, and it's all exactly how it should be in her fairy tale dreams. But the problem is that every fairy tale has a evil stepmother, and the problem is that Gazelle is now filling that evil stepmother role. She's becoming the angry, wicked stepmother who's saying all these cruel things and trying to sabotage her daughter's relationship. And you kind of realize as you're watching it that it's a fairy tale not about Gazelle, but about Morgan. And Gazelle's kind of becoming the villain of Morgan's fairy tale. So I think it's a cool subversion of the original movie. And Amy Adams is having a great time, singing and dancing and really camping up the kind of princess performance that you remember from the first one. She feels exactly like she did in the first one, and kind of brings it all to this movie. And unfortunately, I think she's the only one here who really brings 100% of their A game. She's trying her best, but it's not quite hitting like it should. Maya Rudolph plays the queen of this fantasy town, who's like the evil queen, and they have a pretty good song together. Some of the music is pretty good, but yeah, I think it doesn't necessarily hit 100%. The music is fine, but it's not necessarily super memorable. The performances are fine, but it's not necessarily super memorable. And I liked this more than I thought that I would, especially because I'd heard a couple of bad reviews going into it, and I know that it had been planned for a theater release. at one point and then had gotten changed to a Disney Plus release, so I was kind of thinking it was going to be real bad. But a creative take on the reboot doesn't necessarily do anything super exciting with that premise, but it has fun with it, and Amy Adams has the most fun with it. So if you're an Amy Adams fan, you've been wanting to see Amy Adams kind of back in something that at least lets her have some joy in her life. You know, she's an actress who is kind of in a rut, I would say, in terms of having great performances. And this is not necessarily a great movie, but I think it's a great performance in a pretty mixed movie. So I had a great time watching her in it, more than I thought that I would. I recommend it more than I thought that I would, especially if you have any level of joy for the first one. But even if you just want to see a fun Amy Adams fantasy musical about, you know, letting go of your child and having them grow up and realizing that when you're a parent, your happy ending is giving birth to your child in a way, you know, and your role as a parent is to make the best fairy tale you can for your child. And I liked the message of that story, and I liked the twists on the fairy tale here. So yeah, I had a great time with this, more than I thought that I would. It's not going to be a top movie of the year, but it's way higher than I thought that it would be.
All right. Yeah, I think I watched the first Enchanted on a plane. And I don't think I've watched it since. I thought it was fine. I thought it was okay. It's nothing I've really gone back to or cared for. Is this something you feel like you have to kind of be a fan of the first Enchanted to watch, or you think?
I think you don't have to be a fan of the first Enchanted, but I think if you're not a fan of the first Enchanted, this is not necessarily a movie you're going to like. It doesn't require you to like know the plot of Enchanted or to be necessarily attached to the character specifically of Enchanted, but it's a similar movie in tone and style. So I think if you thought that Enchanted was funny and you like the style of Enchanted, you like this. But if you were super turned off by Enchanted and didn't like it at all, you're not gonna, this is not gonna change your mind. But I do say it's more fairy tale and fantasy than Enchanted was, you know, because Enchanted was like Gazelle's a fish out of water in New York. You know, she's the one who's fantasy, yeah, fairy tale, and everything around her is like the realistic, grounded reality. And I think it's different in that way because the fairy tale's all around her, and she's our attachment to like the real reality. So it's a subversion in that way. So different from the first one in that way, but similar, very similar in tone and in a comedy style.
All right. Anything else you got to say about Enchanted, or can I move on to our next and our final maybe Disney Plus topic?
No, I'm ready to move on. I'm excited to see what we talk about next.
All right. One of the things I was very excited to watch and really kind of enjoyed was Elton John live. Farewell from Dodger Stadium, the first ever kind of worldwide, I think they said worldwide, Disney Plus live broadcast. They have Dancing with the Stars is live on Disney Plus, but I think that's only an American release. I don't think they are a worldwide release. And so, yeah, this was Elton John's last American performance, I think, or at least part of a tour. I wouldn't be surprised if he shows up for, like, a halftime show or something in the future, but he's definitely older. I don't really think he's going to be touring anymore. And Dodger Stadium, iconic kind of place for him, especially like him wearing the Dodger uniform in his concert, iconic image, iconic show. And so it makes sense for this to be the location that he performs his final concert in America. And I watched it live, fell asleep midway through, mainly because it started at 11, which I understand. I stayed up as late as I could, and I didn't end up finishing it. But I know you watched the whole thing today. I really liked it. I definitely think if you're an Elton John fan, it's worth checking out. It opened with, I don't know if they did they show it? Is it still on like the replay of it? All of the past, like people from his era and musicians of the day talking about how important his music is and just kind of saying like goodbye and thank you.
Yeah, it starts with this like 20 minute or so preamble where I was thinking, oh, it's gonna be like the waste of time, you know. I don't want to compare it to like a certain YouTube series I used to watch where they had like this insanely long preamble before the show started. And
fired.
And I was like, oh god, what are we gonna get from here? But it was actually worth watching, and it added a lot of context because I'm an Elton John fan, but I'm not super knowledgeable on like his career and the highs and lows and the people that he impacted and that kind of thing. So it definitely gave me a lot of context on the performance and why it was so cool to see Elton John say his final farewell. And yeah, I watched the whole thing. I had a really great time with it. Really well shot, really well produced. You know, it's Disney's first live worldwide broadcast, like you said, but it's also their first like live concert. So I was curious to see how they were going to make it feel lively. You know, how are they going to cut to the crowds? What are the dynamic shot's going to look like. And they did a great job keeping it interesting, keeping it fun. And that, they did a good job also maintaining the resolution. It didn't drop that much. You know, sometimes it dropped. Didn't maintain the 4K stream the whole time necessarily, but it looked really good. And I'm very excited to see what they do next. Elton John, final farewell concert, is like a huge moment in music, but I'm curious to see what they'll do next for future concerts. I would love to see more live concerts. I love live music. I was going to see this Elton John tour, but the tickets were just too much, and I couldn't justify paying for them. But I'm glad I finally got to watch this, because I was kind of disappointed that I wouldn't have gotten to ever see Elton John after his farewell tour. But I kind of got to see him, you know, and it felt like you were there. They really made you, give you a good sense of the performance and the shows and the effects and all the kind of colors and everything else. So great production value. Yeah, I definitely recommend it for Elton John fans or anyone who's just missing live music. I like Elton John a lot. I like a lot of his music, but he's not in my like top five artists. I'm a big fan, but I'm not a huge fan, and I still had a great time with this. So if you're familiar enough to recognize the hits, you're still going to have a great time here. And if you're just missing live performances after a couple of years of not necessarily being able to go to a lot of them, you're going to have a lot of fun watching this. It made me want to buy some concert tickets. I tell you that. I couldn't get my Taylor Swift tickets, Joe. I got waitlisted by Ticketmaster. Thanks a lot, guys. But I'll go to something.
Yeah, I looked at getting tickets while he was in Atlanta, I think back in August, and they were $300. And I'm like, I like Elton John, but not for $300. So I'm really glad that they put this out. It's just to show his staying power. It's how many guys, how many artists can have their farewell tour and have their farewell performance while still having a song that's on the Billboard Hot 100? Because I looked up to see where his song that he has with Britney Spears is at right now, and it's currently number 55 on the Billboard Hot 100.
And how many people can say their farewell tour was like live broadcast on the biggest streaming platform in the world from one of the biggest content providers in the planet and had an introduction by the president of the United States, you know, like that's pretty awesome, you know. And some of the celebrity appearances you'll get here, they'll cut to the crowd and they'll show people like Neil Patrick Harris just hanging out watching the performance, and that's always pretty cool and big, huge, the stuff like this. Yeah. You go, oh, they're the crowd too. I know them.
Yeah, definitely well made, well produced, especially as far as like a live broadcast can go for a concert performance. And yeah, if you're an Elton John fan, if you like his music, even just to throw in the background while you're doing stuff, it's worth checking out.
Yeah, definitely recommend it. And I'm really excited to see what Disney Plus does next for these live broadcasts.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm curious, especially as a sports fan, to see, because I know the NFL go into negotiations next year, and the I can't remember what the thing is, but if you pay like $300, you can watch all the NFL games. That expires after this season, so I'm curious to see what they do, if they do something with a Disney Plus or a Netflix. Especially with Netflix not really being in the sports game, they already have a deal with Amazon Prime, so I think it'd be very interesting to see one of these streaming services partner with the NFL for watching NFL games.
Could I throw out a prediction, Joe, of who I think another artist they're going to work with in the future is going to be?
Who?
I think we're going to get a Taylor Swift live show. I think the fact that her tour is selling out so hard on Ticketmaster, made so many headlines, and was so talked about, is a great segue for her to do something like that. Give it like maybe one of the final shows of the tour, make it live on Disney Plus. And I also think she has a history with Disney. She had that great look into folklore when she released it, the Pond Sessions at the Lake Pond Sessions, something like that. It was like her production behind the scenes diary thing of folklore. So I would love to see that, Joe. I missed Elton John, I missed Taylor Swift. I would love to be able to see Taylor Swift live on Disney Plus, and I think it's gonna happen. That's my prediction. Write it down now, Joe, so we can come back in, you know, a year and give me some points. Give me some internet points.
Yeah, I think that would be very possible, especially, I don't know, like, what her tour date looks like or her tour dates, but you send her that thing around, like, a holiday or something, too, like Taylor Swift 4th of July concert performance or Taylor Swift Christmas performance or something like that, live concert. I think they'll definitely get a lot of eyeballs and a lot of people buying Disney Plus that month.
I'd be there. I'd sign up again just to say I did, you know. Yeah. We got the Guardians holiday special coming up next episode.
next week.
I'm looking forward to it. I like the Guardians movies. I think James Gunn has a really fun sense of humor, and I'm curious to see how it works. The trailer didn't do much to sell me on this, no. I'll be honest, but no. I'm looking forward to seeing how they'll tie up, because they're selling this as like the epilogue to this phase of Marvel. I'm curious to see how they're going to tie it together and if they're going to do any kind of setup here, because Black Panther, no spoilers here at all, but it didn't do a lot of setting up for like the next, it did a couple of setting up, but it wasn't like, oh, here's the next huge cameo of Thanos or whatever, you know? So I'm curious if we're going to get any kind of big reveal here of something to come up in the future of the MCU.
Yeah, I don't want to say too much, but there wasn't any real post-credit scenes in Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. There was one, and I think because of, I don't want to say much, but because of what that post-credit scene was and how Wakanda Forever ended, I can understand them not wanting to cut to like a comedic post-credit scene. So I'm curious if maybe a post-credit scene they had originally planned for Wakanda Forever, or something that they may have put in Wakanda Forever, they just decided to hold off and put in the as a post-credit scene in this Christmas special instead, because obviously it's James Gunn, Guardians of the Galaxy Christmas special. If you have a comedic scene or something you set up, it's not going to be a crazy tone shift or a feeling of disrespect putting it as a post-credit scene in here.
I will give a tease that I've heard a little bit of something about this special, and that if you're looking forward to, you know, you haven't necessarily seen all of the Marvel connected characters, you know, you watch Black Panther and you were like, where's all my other Marvel characters? If you're looking for some deep cut Marvel cameos, maybe a Fox character that hasn't shown up in a little bit, not seen in the MCU, but seen in a Fox movie, I'll be watching this special. You might get a couple of, I might get a surprise towards the end.
We can maybe talk off air. I thought you were going, when you said Fox, I thought you were talking maybe a different character in the MCU, one who appeared in a different post-credit scene in a different movie, a character that Olivia Wilde may not be very keen to see right now. But yeah, I think that kind of wraps up our show. Just a little tease for next week, and a show you may watch next week if the reports and rumors are true. You know, we talked a little bit before about Disney Plus and Disney having a little bit more mature content and not necessarily being aimed at kids. And that may be a very big topic of discussion next week because of something that's rumored to be said in a television episode. And
I'm curious. I'm thinking about what we could be getting in the Andor finale next week. You know, let's get some spice.
All right, I may tell Tristan off air, and if it doesn't come to fruition, I'll tell people next week. And if it comes to fruition, the internet will be talking about it. And
yeah, I'm glad we ended the show with a bit of tea, Joe. We both were able to drop a little bit of a hint for what they might be expecting next week on their streaming, on the Disney Plus in particular.
All right, and like I said, we'll be watching Willow. So if you want to keep along with our movie of the week, check out Willow before you watch our next episode. And with that, I think we really only have one thing left to do. And that is our MVP for the week. I have my vote, but you watched more than I did. Certain things that we watch and talk about, I don't really think are in the running. Like, obviously, if Malcolm X dropped this week, it would be, okay, who are we giving it to? Spike Lee or Denzel? You know, or we could be talking Christina Ricci or somebody from Adam's Family. But those are more just, hey, we are catching up on those movies. I don't really think they're in the running necessarily for our MVP. And for me, I kind of want to give it to the thing we both watched that we both highly praised. Maybe you want to give it to somebody from 1899, and if you sell me on it, I'll be willing to concede. But I think Elton John pulling off this live concert performance, Farewell. Was it this big thing that everyone was talking about? No, but I don't think there really was this big thing that everyone was talking about in streaming this week. And so I'm kind of locked in on Elton John, but I'm curious to see what your thoughts are on MVP for the week.
Yeah, I was feeling some of it from 1899, but as we talked about the Elton John concert, I was a bit won over, especially because it's like his retirement show. I feel like we can give him the crown towards the end. I was also thinking for a second about Chris Hemsworth. You know, I might want to give him the slight MVP, but to be honest, if you're just comparing like product to product, I feel like you got to give it the win to the Elton John live concert. It's much more ambitious and creative than the Limitless show, which is fine and passable to watch, but not anything special. I thought the Elton John live was special, and it felt like a kind of big turn, especially as a streaming show. It feels like a big moment in streaming that they're trying to figure out how to make live stuff work, and they kind of got it to work here. So I think it's a good step forward in streaming. And Elton John, you know, all the power to you. You got to change streaming somehow, you know?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah, the first ever worldwide live show on Disney Plus. I feel like that's an achievement of itself. He's an icon. He's a legend. And I think I can safely say he is our MVP of the week, Elton John.
Yeah, great episode this week. I had a good time, Joe. Yeah. I'm looking forward to next week. We have a lot to talk about again next week. It was a long episode this week. Next week might even also be long. You know, we got some big stuff to talk about. So I'm looking forward to wrapping up the month with you next week.
All right. I am very much excited to finish out this month, cover everything we missed throughout the month, and talking about what streaming service won the month and what streaming service, well, that was an idea we talked about, like what streaming service can you ditch, but hey, I'd love to be sponsored. I'd love to be sponsored by a streaming service or get money from some of these streaming services from hyping them up and promoting them, so I don't really want to talk too much crap about any of them, but yeah, probably Prime or Hulu.
Amazon sucks. I wouldn't take a sponsor no matter what, baby.
I would. If Jeff Bezos called me personally, he's like, hey, I wanted to make this the Hand Plus podcast brought to you by Amazon Prime. Here's $1 million a year. I'd be like, yes, sir, Mr. Bezos. I have morals, but I love money, and I love not really doing much. And so with that, without further ado, goodbye. Hey, thank you for watching the Movie Change Up podcast. We'd really appreciate if you liked, commented, subscribed, and shared us with anyone you think might be into what we're doing over here. Thank you. Have a nice day.